Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
Hello and welcome back to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Mark Etheridge. We're here to recap week four around the SEC, and it looked like a light lift of a weekend for SEC teams, and in some cases that's what it turned out to be, and in some other cases it wasn't quite so easy, and that's baseball for you. That's a tough lesson to learn sometimes. So we'll recap everything that happened, the good and the bad around the league, but first I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by PitchLogic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play, from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See PitchLogic.com for more information. All right, Mark. I'll be honest. I kind of expected when we would be chatting with each other wrapping up the weekend that we ultimately wouldn't have a whole heck of a lot to talk about. And there's not as much to talk about as there was this time last week. I'm not going to lie to you or the listeners. But I think we saw more interesting things, for better or worse in some cases, over the weekend than we anticipated. So, I think we're going to end up with a lot more to chew on today than we anticipated, at least just speaking for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were, you know, out of the 14 teams, 12 won their series. You have a couple that dropped some games, and maybe we were a little bit surprised. I mean, LSU and Auburn, but they were playing pretty good teams. I mean, I think Austin Peay and Xavier, they're potential regional clubs that are going to do well in their conference. So dropping those games, maybe not as, to casual fan, oh, what are you losing to these kind of teams for? But I think, people are paying attention, no better. I went to Auburn on Sunday, and it was the day after Auburn played what Butch Thompson called the first game of his head coaching career. That's a mouthful. He's been coaching a minute. So for him to feel that way, you kind of wondered after that loss. I mean, in the Friday game, if you recall, Auburn trailed going into the eighth inning, had a home run in the eighth to tie it, and a walk-off in the ninth to win it, right? Two solo shots. So it was anyone's game. They could have very easily been down 0-2 going into Sunday. And with Austin Peay, that was a feisty bunch, and they were energetic, and they were loud and boisterous, and Auburn heard about it on Saturday. And when they came out Sunday, Austin Peay jumped out like 2-0 in the first inning with a home run, and you're thinking, "Oh boy, this is gonna be one of these days it's gonna be wild." But it really wasn't. Auburn just destroyed them. It was 24-5 by the time it was over. It was a run rule game, and it wasn't even that close. It was one of those days, and it was really fascinating listening to Butch, because I mean, he took that loss really personal. The way that they played, they made a whole bunch of errors and walks, and it was you name it, they did it wrong. And for them to come out and look really good, they look like a very polished offense anyway. And pitching-wise, they did enough. And it's always interesting how teams respond, right, after you go through a really, challenging loss like that, how you did it. And for those interested, I did a story on that. It's up on SEC Extra now, just going through, what Butch said to the team and how he approached it. I got a couple players' quotes in there as well, just to kind of understand you know, when you're going through like this, it's kind of like life, right? You're always going to have these moments that are challenging for you. And it's, we all have them, but it's how you respond that really shows, you know, your character and what you're about. And if, for at least this time, Auburn responded superbly, right? And that was, you know, one of the biggest stories for me of, you know, this last pre-conference week.
Yeah, other news out of that series. Well, we knew this going into the series. Joseph Gonzalez did not pitch, skipped in the rotation. As we're recording this earlier, we're recording this Monday evening. He threw a bullpen supposedly earlier today. So if as you're listening to this, there has already been news about Joseph Gonzalez, it's just because we haven't heard yet. So that if there's some big news about him one way or the other, and we're not mentioning it, that's why. So, we expect to hear something about that this week ahead of next weekend. And of course, if you're an Auburn fan, you're holding your breath because this feels a little bit like last year where it was like, we're going to test him and we're not, you know, kind of kicking the can down the road, and you just hope it's not that same kind of deal. So, we will see. I was going to talk about Florida first, Mark, because, they won their series, but I didn't always feel like it, you know. You know, they, much like Auburn, very easily could have lost that series. The opening game, it took a 3-run home run from Colby Shelton when they were down 2 in the 10th to win that game. And then they lost the second game, and then, you know, comfortable win, much like Auburn on Sunday. But I think you'd have to have your head in the sand at this point to not start to think about what they need to do on the mound. Cade Fisher has not been what they hoped on Friday. Liam Peterson has had his moments. He has like individual moments of brilliance in games, but he also makes mistakes, and he's a freshman. And I think we've been spoiled by freshmen in the past, right? Like just in the last 4 to 5 years, we've had Burns and Beam and Carter Holton and Jack Leiter and Kamar Rocker, and I'm sure I'm missing at least several others. But for every one of those, you've got a handful of really talented freshman pitchers who just, it takes them a while. And this year we've got several examples with Peterson. Ethan McElvain at Vanderbilt's not been all that great. Cam Johnson's just flat out not getting used at LSU. So, you know, those are all really talented guys. And so anyway, the inconsistency from Liam Peterson is not totally unexpected, just given his youth. But the reality of the situation is, you know, Cags has been pretty good on Sundays. So you wonder where it leaves them. You know, obviously there's the logistical challenge of, hey, Cags is a two-way player and he's been pitching on Sundays. So if you're going to move him up, it would give him short rest on whenever you decide to move him up. But, and then also, how does his two-way abilities, how does that affect him for the rest of the weekend if you move him up? And obviously that's been a factor in him pitching on Sundays to this point, but it's not just the rotation. It's also, they're still very much trying to figure out who their guys are in the bullpen. Like you there are a couple of them that we know, but you know, they went to Luke McNeely again, another talented freshman. And he just, you know, the secondary stuff has not been as good as maybe we hoped it would be. And he's struggling with location, and it just looks like a freshman who's kind of lost right now. And some of the veterans they were kind of hoping would be stalwarts, like a Blake Purnell, just haven't necessarily been as sharp as they hoped. So it's mostly a rotation problem right now, but it's not entirely a rotation problem. So, and that plays into the rotation issues, right? Because it's one thing if you had like Luke McNeely, for example, just lighten it up out of the bullpen. And it's like, you know what, let's run the kid out there and let's see what he's got. But they don't even have that many options, right? I mean, you could try Ryan Slater, I guess, you know, he's been pretty good and he's multi-inning guy, you know? So you consider stuff like that, but regardless, it was just a weekend where, when you combine it with a midweek loss to UCF, where you start to say, okay, this is too much now for us to just be able to like wave our hand at this and say like, they'll figure it out. And they very well might still, but we're now at a point where we do need to kind of address the elephant in the room, which is that Florida's not pitching like we expected them to.
Right. There are 14 teams in the SEC and they're 13th. And when you're at this point, you're hanging out with Missouri in the pitching column, you're not having a very good time. And that's where we are with Florida. There's talent, There's guys that probably will figure it out. It's just not working right now. And some of that, maybe you need to show roles and you need to move some things around. And they've kept the same three starters for the entire four weeks. And, you know, you've had mixed success at best. I think Fisher, at least he gave you a little bit of length. I think he threw 102 pitches Friday. And after a slow start, he kind of figured some things out. So maybe there's another week of that. But I don't know. Maybe it might be time to consider moving Cags, you know, at least to Saturday this week. Maybe you can move to Friday the following week if things don't go well with Fisher. Because they start with A&M and LSU. And you're talking about high-pressure situations. Everyone's going to be watching those games. It's a tough time to be tweaking things. Right, you love to be cruising when you hit those tough spots in the conference schedule. So, and the other part about with Cags is he's such a good first baseman, and if you pitch him, you know, even Saturday, Friday, then what can he do in the field the rest of the weekend? Because his arm's going to be shot, right? So do you have to age him, and then what does that do to everyone else? And there's just, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces there that Sully gets paid a lot of money to figure out. And I'm sure he's got, you know, some alternatives, but it's just, you know, it's one of these things when your expectations are so high and this really talented club with a great offense that, you know, that I'd like to see him draw a few more walks. I'd like to see him hit for a little high average, but they really sting the ball out of the ballpark. I think, you know, eventually they're, you know, that offense is not going to be what lets them down. They've got to figure it out on the mound. And it all starts with getting more production out of, you know, out of their best pitchers. And, you know, you talked about Peterson, the freshman, and he's been good and mostly good. And then he gives up he hangs a pitch or he mislocates or whatever, and then he's in trouble, right? And that's just part of the maturation process. But, you know, Fisher's a guy, you know, he was really good in his role last year, but it wasn't this role. It wasn't leading off the weekend, setting the tone for the entire series. And you know, up to this point, it hasn't been good, but he's certainly talented enough. So it's you know, and they're going to play A&M, who's, you know, undefeated, one of the two undefeated teams in the country that Florida will play this week. It's not the easiest deal, especially when you got a guy like Prager for A&M who hasn't given up a run all year. So there's even more pressure that you have to be perfect. And granted, he hasn't played against Florida, but he's been really good. So it's all of those, you know, you're putting all that in the pot and you're trying to figure out, you know, what are you going to, you know, what's going to end up. And so, you know, if you're Florida, you're just trying to, you know, experiment and look for reasons maybe that, you know, maybe a guy's, you know, his release point's off or there's something medical you can tweak to get him to pitching the way you want him to, because otherwise, you know, if it's just about ability, then there's a lot fewer answers, right? So you got to tweak something, whether it's lineup, whether it's something in their mechanics or what have you, or maybe it's, you know, it's up here, right? Because it's certainly, this is a big part of pitching, especially is mental. And if you're not having success, it can kind of build. And that may be where we are right now with the Gators.
It should be said, you know, it doesn't feel like they're that far off, these guys individually, because some of the peripheral numbers are still pretty good. Like Fisher's a 27-4 strikeout to walk and 16 2/3. Opponent batting average is .310, which is high, but it's not astronomical. Like, so he's given up some hits. And, you know, and he's going to need to be better. I'm not saying like he's good enough. Like, no, he's going to have to be better. But, you know, even Liam Peterson, he struck out 22 in 16 innings. Opponents are hitting .186 against him.
He's just going to be a star. There's no doubt. It's just how soon does it happen?
Yeah. So it doesn't feel like they're that far off. So if they just kind of keep status quo to some degree, the coaching staff is not going to be off their rocker if they make that decision. Because in some respects, it does feel like they're pretty close, even though the numbers might not necessarily, some of the numbers might not necessarily show that. I think others do. Mm-hmm. Another team that is knocking the cover off the ball here is, I want to go to Tennessee real quick because we can be quick on this because I'm building to a question here. First off, no AJ Russell again. AJ Causey was in it Friday and he was great again. Like, seems like they found something. I said this on one of my weekend waypoints videos over the weekend, how that guy had a 5 ERA at Jack State last season beyond me, but hey, you know what? Players get better. They respond to certain types of coaching. That's just the reality. But he was great. Obviously, Drew Beam continues to be consistent. You know, and if they get Russell back, I think they're in really good shape. I think they found the rotation if Russell comes back and is the same kind of guy. And but even if not, that 1-2 is pretty good. But offensively, they're just knocking the cover off the ball. They scored 24 runs in one of the games against Illinois. They scored 39, I believe, in three games, which is, I'm told, is good. And I wondered now when you look at their lineup, and I'll pull up their stat sheet so I can make sure that I'm like really looking at this clear eyed. But so they started the season without Ariel Antigua, who was going to be in the mix to be the starting shortstop. So they didn't have him to begin with. So they had to kind of move pieces around without him. So you start with that, and then you have a freshman in Dean Curley who really wasn't part of the early season mix, and then all of a sudden he inserts himself in it. You add to that, you know, Kavaris Tears is in the midst of what looks like a breakout season. Robin Villeneuve is a JUCO transfer who I'd never really heard of. And when they played Virginia Tech in the fall, I was there. He didn't play, so I really didn't know who he was. And he's been great. So they've got a situation now where it feels like if you throw into the mix, okay, Antigua is going to be getting healthier as time goes on. Obviously, Dean Curley is now a part of this mix. Reese Chapman had a big home run over the weekend. I think that's somebody they would like to get in the lineup a little more consistently. Brad Keylori is a guy they really like as a JUCO transfer. Really hadn't swung the bat well, but in a perfect world, he's part of the mix. You know, so it does feel like they're kind of 13, 14 deep maybe in the position player side with guys they really can trust. So not only A, can they withstand injury, but as it stands now, they have so many permutations they can work through in the lineup that I've started to kind of wonder if maybe this is the deepest lineup they've had under Tony. And obviously people are going to go back to the
great year. Yeah.
Right. The 2022 season and look at that and think like, well, surely it was that team. And maybe it is. Like, I'm not going to pretend to be a scholar on this. Maybe that core of that offense was better. Maybe. I'm not even necessarily saying it was, but this feels deeper than that was, because at that time they were still working with some recruits from the Dave Serrano era, and they were still kind of building what they're doing now. And so it feels like this might actually be a more fully operational lineup than the ones they've had in the past. And we'll see once they get into SEC play, but man, it's just so deep. They've had so many guys step up and be better than I expected from them. Mm-hmm. So I'll be intrigued to see if this holds up, because I do think, I mean, look, they've hit 44 home runs already. Like, this does feel like a team that could be could end up being the most dangerous offense in the SEC, and maybe, like I said, the deepest of the Tony era, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly Tony's built a monster there. I mean, they've so many options, so many players. If one guy's having a rough day, you've got, you know, multiple options, you know, to play with that lineup. So it's a huge advantage. I guess, you know, it's all dependent on how they're going to hit once SEC play starts, just like for everyone else. You know, we can talk about that with Georgia, with Alabama, who Tennessee will play in the opening. They scored 40 runs this week, right, in three games. So you look at Tennessee and Alabama playing, I mean, that could be a lot of scored action in that series, especially with both of them a little maybe understaffed on the mound potentially. So I do think that you mentioned Tennessee. This could be, they're a really physical team, and they typically have been under Tony. And the question will be, you know, what are you going to get out of Russell if he's able to come back? I'm with you. I think that rotation is going to stack up pretty well with anybody the way Causey's throwing right now. But otherwise, you know, if not, what does Sunday look like? You know, is it Combs? Is it Snead? You know, is it someone else that isn't getting a chance right now? So I think that, you know, hopefully Russell comes back and solves that question. And he's in one of those three spots because he was lights out early. He's their Friday guy, and maybe you shuffle the rest of the rotation. So I think the other place I'd like to go is just Georgia, with just how they're just pummeling people. I know Northern Colorado is not good, but what Georgia is able to do right now has, you know, it's got excitement around that program. You know, Wes's first year, and, you know, he's a pitching guy, and boy, are they just knocking the cover off the ball in what really has not been known as a hitter's park. They are definitely turning it into one. It's playing tiny in these days. Charlie Condon doing it he wants. He's been the best player in the country so far. And I'm really excited to see what happens. Go to Kentucky, you know, and Kentucky's not feeling super happy about themselves right now after a rough weekend. They dropped 2 out of 3, 2 bad losses, really, to Kennesaw State, 2 lopsided, I'll call them. So what does that look like when Georgia goes in there? Kentucky's the best team that they have faced, and they're also probably a little angry, wanting to prove a point after a rough weekend. So that to me is one of the most fascinating look-aheads, if you want to opening weekend.
Yeah, agreed on that. You know, I don't know if, and first of all, for those who maybe are watching this video and have watched me scratching my nose a lot, I'm heroically fighting off a sneeze and have been like really since we started this. So I'm like trying to like, you know, rub my nose and try to get it to go anyway. That just so you guys don't think I think I'm just crazy. That's what I'm working on here. But like I said, I'm heroically fighting it off. I'm with you on Georgia, and I don't know if this team will be good enough to be a postseason team. That's still TBD, but this is what it looks like to set yourself up to be that, right? Mm-hmm. And you compare that to, you know, we always thought Georgia was going to be better than Missouri this year, but you compare that to the way Missouri's early season has gone, where they've taken on some losses that are just like non-starters if they ever even wanted to, you know, dream about being a postseason team. And so, again, like I didn't expect Mizzou to have the kind of success early season that Georgia has had, but it is just two very different seasons so far for two programs that we kind of looked at as being rebuilding, right? And I think the difference for Georgia is going to be, do they find their guys in the mound? I mean, they've got good numbers so far, but it does still feel like, look, I feel pretty confident that, you know, Leighton Finley is going to be, you know, a rotation guy through and through, but you know, Maracna started on the weekends. Now they've got Maracna going in the midweek this week. So it does still feel like they're doing a little bit of shuffling, which is fine. Like, they got a lot of guys, you know, that's kind of part of the process. But I do think it's going to come down to how good is their pitching actually, because I think there's enough depth here offensively. And you mentioned how good Condon's been. I've started to hear people, and not just, you know, jokers like you and me, like I've started to hear people who would know that Charlie Condon might have worked his way into the first overall pick discussion with the way he's swinging the bat. And he's got limitations. Like, I'm not here to try to convince you that he's going to be a slick defensive player at the next level. He's probably a first baseman or maybe a left fielder, right?
He's a corner outfielder.
Yeah. And he's got a decent arm. So, like, maybe it's right field. But in a world where Kyle Schwarber can play corner outfield in the big leagues, Charlie Condon probably can too, but he has worked his way into that rarefied air. Now, I would still probably bet on Cags or someone like Travis Bazana, who can play middle infield, right? But Condon has edged his way into that discussion, which is really, really impressive.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
Te presentamos a Daniela. A ella nada le sorprende.
Siempre estoy lista para lo que venga.
Por eso,
este año fui a Walmart a comprar todo para combatir mis alergias antes que comience la temporada de alergias.
Claro, porque Walmart tiene
productos de alta calidad para las alergias como descongestionantes, sprays nasales, antihistamínicos y más, y a precios muy buenos.
¿Y sabías que también tiene pickup y delivery? Daniela, ¿te sorprendiste?
¿Yo? No, ¿qué va? Claro que sabía que Walmart tiene pickup y delivery.
Bienvenido a una farmacia más simple. Bienvenido a tu Walmart.
Let's talk about a team whose pitching feels very settled. That's LSU.
Yeah.
The 1-2 of Luke Holman and Gage Jump combined has yet to allow a run this season. Four starts. Neither of them have allowed a run. So take that, Ryan Prager. They've got two of them, which is actually kind of funny because I actually heard somebody comp like Ryan Prager is kind of like a left-handed Luke Holman in terms of like the stuff is good, but it's not like blow it by you stuff. It's going to be like a mix and like a guy who's going to have to use all his pitches and locate, but it's like, it's better stuff than you typically think of as a pitchability guy, but it's not so good that he can just have bad location and still get the ball past people. So that's kind of an interesting deal there, but yeah, so Holman and Jump have been great and yeah, you lost a Sunday game to Xavier, but as you alluded to, I mean, Xavier, they won 39 games last year. So like, I think they'll probably be pretty good. Eliminated Vanderbilt in the regional last year, lest you forget. So I don't think that's a terrible loss. And also, honestly, if you were going to take a loss in this series, I think the best version of a loss for LSU is a loss in which Thatcher Hurd pitches really well. Because I think it gives you confidence that, okay, look, maybe he's not going to be consistent as we'd like, but hey, he's a Sunday guy. And if we know he has this kind of performance in his bag, where I think it was five or five plus with 10 strikeouts. If he's got that in his bag, then hey, for a Sunday guy, like that's, you're in business. Yeah. Now
he gave up one unearned run in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's just incredible for
take
a Sunday
that guy. Every time.
Yeah, exactly. So now the flip side is the offense. And I'll tell you what, I'll let you go because I actually don't know that I have fully formed thoughts on what to think about LSU's lineup right now.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting by on a lot of walks and a lot of hit batsmen and some timely hitting. I think in 9 of their 16 games, if I have the stat correctly, they've had 8 hits or fewer. And the schedule has not been, you know, as challenging as it's going to be. So that's concerning me. Jay's got a lot of options with his lineup, and he's moving people around. And, you know, you never see the same lineup day after day. And, you know, that's when you have so many good players, you know, that's one way to do it. You just, at some point, I wonder if guys can't get it, you know, they can't get that consistent spot in the lineup. They can't have that rhythm. Maybe that's holding them back. I don't know. But, I mean, who am I to question Jay Johnson, who won the national title last year? But you know, you look at the results, and they just aren't getting the hits that you would expect from a team with that much talent. because there's a bunch of pro guys in that lineup. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, sometimes you always see this where guys don't hit the, you know, the non-SEC teams as well. Maybe it's not premium velocity. Maybe it's the struggle with that. And then, you know, once the power arms roll into town, they suddenly perform better. And, you know, I kind of got to watch. That's what we're going to see with LSU, because those guys are they're twitchy, and there's a lot of good, you know, a lot of good athletes on that club. So going back to, I mean, when you have Holman and Jump and Hurd pitching this way, you don't have to do a lot, right? You just need to, they're going to keep you in the game. You've just got to get that clutch hit. So if you're getting base runners, and they just need somebody to come through and draw in, you know, put some crooked numbers up, and I think LSU will be fine. And that's the thing. They've got a lot of time to figure this out. They go to Starkville, and Mississippi State's pitching really well right now, but that's not a dynamic offense. So you think, you know, you're gonna get really low scoring, tight kind of games, fun games this weekend, and it'll be a good barometer of what LSU does against the better arms.
It's funny, I would comp LSU's situation so far this season to Arkansas's. You know, Arkansas over the weekend, a close Friday win, or I guess it was Saturday, game one of a doubleheader, a 3-1 win over McNeese, where Hagan Smith pitches great and the offense does just enough. The next two games, though, were a little bit more wide open. I think they scored 29 combined runs, or 28 or 29 combined runs in the last two games. And, you know, is that beating up on Southland Conference pitching? Is that figuring some things out? Probably a little bit of both, if we're going to be honest. But that's kind of where Arkansas is right now, where it's, I think we have a pretty good feel for what they're going to get. And talk about good Sunday guys. I mean, Mason Molina wasn't great this past weekend, but if that's your Sunday guy, you're in really good shape. So everything else has gone swimmingly. Like, Hagan Smith seems to have rounded out some of those rough edges. We've obviously talked about him a lot this early portion of the season. Brady Tigard has taken to being a starter great. I mean, that was a question that I had, was, okay, he's never really done this. Like, how's it going to look? And it's been, the answer has been excellent so far. So, much like LSU, I have a high level of confidence that the lineup is going to be good enough to give them what they need, because what they need is probably not that much, frankly. You know, right. You score five or six runs, you feel pretty good about it on the weekend days anyway.
And all the pieces are there, right?
Yeah. You feel good about the individual pieces for sure.
Yeah. We kind of mentioned Mississippi State. What about the week Dakota Jordan had? I mean, come on. What he hit? Is that four games with home runs in a row? Just absolutely on a tear. He's got, what, 8 home runs this year out of Mississippi State's 12. I mean, he's really carrying that lineup. And thankfully for him and the rest of Mississippi State, Hunter Hines is really getting cranked up as well. He had a game where he had 3 hits, and then I think he had another game where he hit his first home run of the year. Really accomplished hitter. That if they get those two back to back in the middle order going at the same time with Marshawn and Larry and some of the other pieces that they have, the mid that order is going to be pretty formidable. The question for them is going to be the backside. What are they getting out of those, you know, guys 6 through 9? And then, you know, what happens after the starters? I think that's still a question for me. Their top 3 starting pitchers are really good. Midweek's kind of been a problem. But and then at times, middle relief, getting to Auger or Schulke, that's been, you know, it's had its moments as well. So those are for me, the questions Mississippi State has going in, you know, having to play, you know, they play LSU, A&M, and Florida in the first 3 weeks. And we're going to learn a lot of this club. They're on a 9-game winning streak, playing as well as they played maybe in a couple of years. And I think that there's actually some optimism, you know, as they head into SEC play. I think that, you know, the question I had is, you know, what success in these first three week SEC weekends for Mississippi State? Is 3-6 okay, right? You definitely don't want to get swept, But if you could steal one, or maybe not steal, if you win one all three weekends, you probably take that, right? And you're playing three top, I don't know what Florida is this week, were they eight? Top eight teams, and they were four last week. I mean, you're playing some really quality opponents. Nobody else is playing that kind of opposition every week. So it's you just kind of have to understand, you know, where you are, who you're facing, and try to be competitive in those games and get better so that when the schedule does lighten up a little bit, and maybe it's just a little, but everything is going to be less than that, where you can be competitive and have the kind of season where you can do it. And I think that's what everybody in Starkville wants to see.
I wouldn't have imagined before the season that we'd be sitting here after 4 weeks and I feel better about the Mississippi State pitching staff than I do about the lineup. That's kind of the reality we're living in right now. You know, as Dakota Jordan has gotten better and as Hunter Hines has maybe started to wake up a little bit, you know, Logan Kohler's never really gotten it going. Bryce Chance has cooled off. You know, they're still kind of juggling catching a little bit because Ross Heifel still can't catch. So and Joe Powell's been actually pretty doggone good. So like that's actually kind of been a godsend, because otherwise you'd have a full-time gig for Johnny Long, who's great defensively, but not so much offensively. So, I just think this is kind of going to be what it's going to be for this team this year. I don't think there's a silver bullet out there. It's just going to have to be enough, and we'll find out whether or not it will be here pretty soon. Just quickly, Ole Miss, sweeping Morehead State, much like Mississippi State, you'll just take the fact that it was kind of a quiet routine. There was a one run game on Sunday, but kind of a quiet routine series sweep, which is kind of what you need when you're gearing up right, exactly. And, you know, and it does seem like they are smoothing some things out offensively. Ethan Leger has come around. Luke Hill has come around a little bit. Jackson Ross has been pretty good. The pitching has seemed to get a little better, especially at the back with, you know, Sonye. So, you know, some positive signs. Again, both of those programs, though, like those fans are just kind of on edge a little bit, and they're going to have to do some winning in SEC play to completely change minds. That's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah. And moving Liam Doyle to Saturday was interesting for me. He was a guy who really hadn't pitched a ton and I didn't really know what his role was going to be, and he was good Saturday. So I think, you know, he certainly did enough to I would assume that Michael running back out there again. So I think that, you know, if you have a high ceiling guy like that, that's kind of what they're missing. I mean, TJ Quinn was supposed to be that guy, and he's kind of scuffled a little bit. So, you know, that to me is Ole Miss. They're starting to hit. If their pitching comes around and they're able to have some success late in games, both on the mound defensively and at the plate, because I think they're going to be in a lot of close games. So it's going to be that important, you know, to have that success late. I also really fascinated with, you know, they opened with South Carolina, and at home, South Carolina is a team that hasn't played a great schedule other than one weekend, you know, and they played two incredible games, as you well know, with Clemson. But they kind of dominated everyone else. What happens against Ole Miss? That's another game, especially in Oxford. That's one that makes it even more challenging to predict, you know, which way that's going to go. Because, you know, if it was Columbia, it'd be pretty easy. You pick South Carolina, but in Oxford, you know, that does give you pause. I think that, you know, that can be a really challenging place to play, especially if they have some early success and the crowd kind of feels the liquid energy and starts to get involved.
It feels like it plays a little bit into South Carolina's hand. I just Googled the weather for this weekend in Oxford, kind of a stormy Friday. And then Sunday kind of cloudy and no precipitation, but kind of gross. Like the worse the weather can be there for South Carolina, the better for them. Because if the weather's good, they're going to have a whole bunch of people out there and it's going to be a crazy atmosphere. And so they, this is the rare weekend where the Gamecocks might actually be rooting for some rain, not enough rain to really ruin things, but some rain, right, just to kind of depress turnout a little bit.
There you go.
Yeah. Wrapping up kind of the rest of it, you mentioned South Carolina, sweep of Longwood, really nothing to see there. What else do we have? We talked about Georgia, Northern Colorado, Vanderbilt sweeping Illinois State. And to me, the most impressive thing there is they continue to show they can at least win some games different ways. You know, Friday, they needed basically all of their 14 runs to get a win. I think the final was 14-9, but then got great pitching the next 2 days. Bryce Cunningham with 8 innings on Saturday. Devin Fiatrell with the first complete game of the season on Sunday. First complete game of the season in the SEC, period, not just for Vanderbilt. Yeah. So I think that's important for them to continue to show that they can win games that way. And then we kind of touched on it, but Missouri splitting 4 games with Purdue Fort Wayne, which is tough. You know, I've mentioned a bunch that this season for Mizzou is going to need to be process oriented, not results oriented, but that is indisputably bad optics. Going 3-4 3-4 in 7 games against Horizon League opponents the last 2 weekends. It's not exactly what you're looking for. So that is kind of the rest of the action there, Mark. Anything with that? Oh, and we kind of mentioned Kentucky's series loss to Kennesaw, but the interesting thing there for me is that they're really not fielding the ball well this year. And that's weird. We could agree.
Especially tape takes for them, right? I mean,
you
start with that and then you build on it.
Right. You know, last year their calling card was playing great defense and they took care of all of their business in non-conference play. So over the weekend, losing a series to a non-conference foe and playing poor defense in some spots was just like a jarring thing to have happen. So feel free to chime in with any of that on any of that stuff, Mark, before we close out here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Kentucky's had so much success last year. I'll be surprised if they don't respond well to that. I mean, they just seem like the kind of team that loves a good chip on their shoulder. And hey, people are going to probably pick Georgia this week. The game's in Lexington. The series is in Lexington. I do think that look out for the Wildcats to respond pretty well. I guess a couple other, just looking ahead to the weekend, Vanderbilt hosting Auburn. It's a ranked matchup. Really, really fun matchup because you have Vandy, who has all these power arms, against an Auburn lineup that can really swing it and they can hit fastballs. So that's going to be that to me is a really fun matchup. Another ranked matchup, Tennessee and Alabama, two really offensive clubs. Now, not that they can't pitch, but their offenses are their calling card. That's a fun one. We talked about Ole Miss and South Carolina. We talked about LSU, Mississippi State. We all mentioned Arkansas and Missouri, although maybe we shouldn't, because if Missouri's not handling the Horizon, the number one team in the nation on their home field is going to be a tall, tall order. And then, you know, then you've got Texas A&M going to Florida, which is where I'll be, and I'm fired up for that. So that's, I think, you got a top 10 matchup, A&M's undefeated. Florida, kind of like what we talked about with Kentucky, they're going to be hearing all week about how they're, they're struggling. What's wrong with this team? This would be a great opportunity for them to come out and kind of right the ship and get some momentum, because in week two, Florida goes to LSU. So if you're struggling going to LSU, that is not a great recipe. So that you know that Sully and the gang are going to be ready for the Aggies when they come to Condren.
No doubt about that. A heck of a first weekend. About a lot of really good matchups. I mean, any permutation would have been great because we have so many good teams. Yeah. But it really felt like we did get a good opening weekend in terms of kind of evenly parceling out, good team on good team throughout the entire league. So yeah, we're at this time next week, we will probably struggle to keep it as efficient as we kept this one, even though we've already gone past 40 minutes, which was a given basically. That's the way it goes. But looking forward to it this weekend. Mark will be in Gainesville. I will actually be monitoring from home. you know, maybe kicking around some ideas of some things to celebrate opening weekend and to do coverage from home on that. But looking forward to reading all of Mark's coverage from out in Gainesville, and you should do the same. That is going to do it for this edition of Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at d1baseball.com. I put out a call the last couple of weeks to say, hey, we don't do a really good job of asking you to do this. So please go rate or review or do whatever on your podcast app to tell people about this podcast. I have noticed that people have done that. So if you have done that, thank you. If you have not done that, we kindly ask that you get on it, to put it bluntly. And do that because it helps us in some way that Mark and I don't totally understand, but we're told it helps. So, so go ahead and do that for us. Do us that favor. We would greatly appreciate it. Thank you to PitchLogic for sponsoring this and every episode of Howie to Hoover. Thank you to Mark as always. And thank you, the listener, for listening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's SAUCONY.com.